Welcome back, everyone. We've had a lot of requests to take a deep dive into virtual hearings, and today we're going to do just that.
And you know, we're not just talking theory here. We're actually looking at a case study, a real-life virtual hearing that pulled it off, even with a 12-day hearing and a $10 million price tag.
Whoa, that's intense. I mean, we've all been on video calls that go sideways, but for something that important. Okay, I'm hooked. Tell me more.
Well, it's pretty amazing what can be done online these days. This case was complex. Multiple parties, lawyers, expert witnesses, over 1,000 exhibits, and all happening on Zoom.
Oh, wow. So not like my weekly family Zoom call. This is serious business. So how did they avoid a total disaster? I'm picturing frozen screens, you're on mute moments, the whole nine yards.
Right. And that's where the preparation comes in. Big time.
Yeah.
Our source emphasizes leave as little to chance as possible, and they really took that to heart. They actually held separate test sessions for each party involved.
So it wasn't just, hey, can you hear me, and that's it?
No way. They went all out. Even the arbitrators, who were new to Zoom, had two separate practice runs. Everyone was encouraged to test under realistic conditions, you know, simulating internet issues and other things that could go wrong during the real hearing.
That's so smart. It's like a dress rehearsal for a play, right? You wouldn't want opening night to be a tech meltdown. Speaking of tech, what about all the documents? I mean, a complex case like this must have mountains of paperwork. Did they go completely paperless?
It's interesting they didn't. They actually used physical binders for the arbitrators. But for witnesses, it was all digital, all shared electronically.
So kind of a hybrid approach. Why do you think they went that route?
I think in a high-stakes situation like this, they wanted to make sure everything was as smooth and familiar as possible. Especially for the arbitrators who had to make the final decision. No one wants to be fumbling with new technology when millions of dollars are on the line.
That makes sense. So how did they keep everything organized and running smoothly? I mean, with so many people, so many documents, how did they make sure everyone was literally on the same page?
Well, that's where the virtual hearing order and protocols came in. It was their rule book, basically. It laid out all the ground rules for how the virtual hearing would be run.
Ah, so like the do's and don'ts of participating in a virtual hearing.
Exactly. How to present evidence, handle objections, all of that. And it's not like it was set in stone either. The source emphasized that the parties could adapt these protocols as needed, make changes based on what worked best for them.
So it wasn't just a one-size-fits-all situation. They were flexible.
Absolutely. They even mentioned an arbitrator who shared an order from a previous case to help this team get started. So there was definitely a collaborative, let's figure this out together kind of vibe.
That's great. It shows that they were willing to learn from each other and make the process as effective as possible. I'm picturing all these moving parts, all this technology. It must have been a lot to handle. Did they have like a tech guru on standby, making sure everything ran smoothly?
Oh yeah, you're talking about the administrator, right?
Yeah.
They were crucial. They were basically the behind the scenes hero, making sure all the tech worked, all the logistics were in place, everything ran on schedule.
I bet they had their hands full.
They did. And the source mentions that they even set up a group chat for the arbitrators so they could communicate quickly and easily during the hearing.
That's clever, a sort of virtual backstage area for the key players, right?
Mm.
And it kept things moving, no unnecessary interruptions. Did they have other ways of using tech to make things easier?
Well, they also mentioned legal teams having support staff handle screen sharing during the hearing.
Smart move. It lets the lawyers focus on the legal stuff, not the tech stuff.
Right. It's all about efficiency. Right. But even with the best planning, the best tech, things don't always go exactly as planned. You know, there are always going to be little hiccups along the way.
Oh, for sure. So how do they deal with that? Do they just throw up their hands and say, well, so much for technology?
Not at all. They were flexible. They were problem solvers. For example, remember those exhibit binders for the arbitrators? The carts they ordered to hold them were supposed to arrive unassembled.
Oh, no. I can see the headlines now. Multi-million dollar hearing delayed by unassembled carts.
Right. But instead of panicking, the legal team got creative. They found another shelving system that was cheaper, faster, and already put together. They turned a potential disaster into a win.
That's amazing. It shows a real can-do attitude, a willingness to adapt and overcome any obstacle. It makes me wonder what other unexpected situations might benefit from a virtual approach. But first, let's dive into these top 10 tips from our source. I'm curious to see what other gems they have to offer. All right, let's get into these top 10 tips. There are probably some things that are easy to miss when you're thinking about all this.
Oh, for sure. One that really stands out to me, and it's so simple, is the need for frequent breaks.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I mean, we've all been there, right? Staring at a screen for hours on end, it's exhausting.
Exactly. Zoom fatigue is real, and it can really impact everyone's focus. You need those breaks to step away, clear your head, come back refreshed.
It's like anything else. You can't run a marathon without stopping to catch your breath.
Okay, that's a great tip. What else jumped out at you?
Well, another one is about technical support, specifically for screen sharing.
Yep.
The source actually recommends that the lawyer who's asking the questions shouldn't be the one handling the technology. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, can you imagine trying to manage a complex document, present it clearly, and field questions all at the same time?
Right. It's too much for one person. It's much smoother if you have someone else handling the tech side of things.
So the lawyer can focus on the lawyering? Okay, good tip. What else?
This one's really important, especially if you're new to all this virtual stuff. The source emphasizes using the virtual hearing protocols to address any concerns you might have.
So if something feels unclear or you're worried about a potential issue, don't just stay quiet. Speak up.
Exactly. Use the protocols as your guide. It's about being proactive.
And making sure everyone's on the same page, right? Which brings us back to the human element, doesn't it? Even though it's all virtual, it's still people who are making this work, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting because in a traditional courtroom, you can pick up on those subtle cues, the body language, the little side conversations.
You get a feel for the room, the atmosphere.
Exactly. But in a virtual setting, you lose all of that. It's harder to gauge someone's reaction or intentions, and that's where trust becomes even more important.
So it's not just about trusting the technology, it's about trusting the people on the other side of the screen.
Exactly. You have to believe that everyone is committed to a fair and impartial process, even though you're not all in the same room. And that trust doesn't just happen, it has to be built.
How do you build trust in a virtual environment?
Well, it starts with being transparent. Communicating clearly, being reliable.
Following through on your commitments, being responsive to questions, making sure everyone feels heard.
Exactly. And you know those virtual hearing orders and protocols we talked about? They actually play a big role in building trust too.
Oh, how so?
Because they provide that structure, that framework. Everyone knows what to expect, what the rules are, and that creates a sense of predictability and fairness.
It's like a virtual safety net, right?
Yeah.
Even if things get a little heated, there's a process in place.
Precisely. And remember, these protocols aren't set in stone. They can be adapted as needed. But that initial framework is really important for establishing trust.
And the administrator, they must play a key role in all of this too, right? I mean, we talked about their technical expertise, but it seems like they're also a facilitator, a neutral party who keeps everything running smoothly.
Oh, absolutely. They're like the glue that holds the whole virtual hearing together. They're constantly communicating, troubleshooting, making sure everyone has what they need.
It's a big job. It makes me wonder, though, is there ever a time when technology isn't the best solution, even in a virtual hearing? I mean, we talked about those physical binders for the arbitrators.
That's a really good point. Just because we can do something virtually doesn't always mean we should.
Sometimes the old-fashioned ways are still the best ways.
Exactly. It's about finding the right balance.
So if you were advising a legal team about to embark on their first virtual hearing, what would be your top takeaways?
Well, first, preparation is key. Test your tech. Know the platform, practice your presentation. Second, communication is crucial. Make sure everyone understands the protocols, knows how to get help if they need it.
Be prepared for anything, right?
And be flexible. Be willing to adapt. Be open to feedback and think outside the box to find solutions.
So it's not just about replacing courtrooms with webcams. It's about using technology to enhance the legal process, make it more accessible.
Exactly. And it's about recognizing that virtual hearings aren't a one-size-fits-all solution. They require careful planning, clear communication.
And maybe the most important takeaway is that virtual hearings are still about people, people working together.
Beautifully said. It's about building trust, embracing collaboration.
As we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I have a question for you, the listener. What aspect of this virtual hearing surprised you the most? Was there anything that really stood out to you in terms of benefits or challenges?
Honestly, I think what impressed me the most was how meticulous they were with their planning. It wasn't just like, oh, let's go virtual and see what happens. They really thought through every potential problem, you know, like internet issues, managing all those exhibits, even making sure the arbitrators were comfortable with the technology.
It's almost like they were expecting things to go wrong and had a backup plan for every scenario.
Yeah, and their success wasn't just about avoiding technical disasters. They really focused on creating an environment where everyone felt comfortable and could participate effectively. Think about it. Those binders for the arbitrators, the legal teams having tech support for screen sharing, the administrator always there to help. It all adds up to a really smooth experience.
Like a well-oiled machine or maybe a well-conducted orchestra with everyone playing their part perfectly.
I like that. And it really highlights the point that this is about people. As much as it's about technology, you have to understand their needs, anticipate their challenges, and create a virtual space that works for everyone.
So let's zoom out for a minute. We've been talking about virtual hearings in the legal world, but this story has implications that go way beyond that, right?
Right. It makes you wonder, if we can do this with something as complex as a legal hearing, what other areas of our lives could benefit from this kind of transformation?
That's a really interesting thought. It's like we've opened up a whole new world of possibilities.
Think about education, healthcare, government services, all these areas where people are often limited by geography or logistics. What if we could make those things more accessible, more efficient, more equitable for everyone through virtual platforms?
That's a powerful idea. A student in a rural community could have access to world-class education. Patients could consult with specialists who are miles away. Citizens could engage with their government from anywhere.
Exactly. It's about using technology to break down those barriers and create a more inclusive society. But we have to be careful, too.
Right. Virtual isn't always the answer.
We need to be thoughtful. We need to plan. And we need to consider the unique needs of each situation. But this case study shows us that when virtual solutions are done right, they can be a real force for positive change.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to leave you with a question to think about. What unexpected situation in your own life could benefit from a virtual approach? Maybe it's that family reunion you've been putting off, or a conference you'd love to attend but can't travel to, or even just your weekly book club meeting. The possibilities are really endless, and who knows? Maybe you'll be inspired to create your own virtual success story using the lessons we've learned today to make a positive impact in your world. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, stay curious.